So Chanel, why don't you tell us how you get your start in music?
Well, I've always been singing, like, since I was a kid. And I started playing piano when I was, like, 5, I suppose. And I got really bored of playing everyone else's songs, so I decided to write my own. It all started with this guy, of course, because love seems to be the most inspiring thing for me for songwriting. And that was when I was like 14, started writing songs. And I applied to LIPA when I was 18 to go across the sea to England, study at Paul McCartney's school, and just, write songs and have a band and perform and see where it led me. And so I've been there for 3 years and I'm graduating this summer, which I cannot wait for. And I mean, it's been wonderful, of course, but I'm definitely ready to move on and be a rock star.
Now are you back in LA for good? Because you're in LA now, right?
I'm in LA now for the summer, and then I'm gonna like hop between London and here and maybe a bit of Germany and Europe. It really depends, because like you never know with this job where you'll be most popular or whatnot. So I got my whole circus rock thing, and my plan is to just wherever I am, like take this cabaret comic performance and just use the circus acts in that community, so I could like lift up people from each section.
Now you've got a little bit. I know you consider your music circus rock, which is awesome, but I also hear a little bit of vaudeville in you. You know, I mean, in your vocal, like, well, especially in your vocal presence, because you have a lot of that vibrato that a lot of singers from the vaudeville era used. And I noticed that because see, my grandmother's aunt, I don't know if you've heard of this person, but her name, her but my grandmother's aunt was a singer called Sophie Tucker, and she did a lot of that, and so I'm familiar with a lot of that from doing my family tree and everything, and it's good to see it coming back with a modern twist. How did you come up with that, and who are your influences?
Well, I think I couldn't really control it, because I remember being in choir when I was a kid and having this vibrato and my choir teacher telling me to stop. And I'm like, no, it's who I am. But I do love everything. Like, I listen to a lot of musical theater, so that makes sense. And I listen to a lot of 20s music. And I love Gwen Stefani, and she kind of has that as well.
Yeah, she does. She does. I mean, a lot of ska players have that too. A lot of ska singers, especially the female singers in that genre. Now, are you a fan of like the big band era? Because when I was a kid, my mom used to like watch all the Judy Garland movies and stuff like that. Are you into stuff like that or?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think I'm into everything, because it's I mean, it's pretty vague, but it's like, if you can use everything in your music, why not? Like, you take the best parts of each era and just throw it all into the pot. especially like in today's age, we're influenced by so many things, like we don't even realize. Like fashion, people are dressing. You have people that do the whole pin curl thing, and then you have like the hippies and everything like that. So I like that it's all coming back.
Yeah, everything seems to be coming back full circle nowadays. Well, let me ask you this. Out of all your influences, if you could pick one era of music and live in that, what would it be and why?
I think the 60s. because there's so many new things happening in the 60s. And there was like that skiffle thing and like the rock and roll coming up, and really the first time people were like rebellious in that kind of rock way. And I love that, because there's so much originality.
And I think what made it so cool was that was like after rock, that was the decade after rock started with Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis and everything. So it's trying to find its place, you know, where it's in its
Like twist
adolescence.
on it.
Yeah, exactly. So you, that's where, if you notice, that's where it starts branching in all these different directions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a good marker for that, in my opinion, is the Beatles. Like, if you remember how wholesome the Beatles were when they first started versus mm-hmm. when they broke up, I mean, they were a totally different band.
Definitely, definitely. Well, especially like the songwriting aspect of the 60s, it was really tight, you know, because it still had that old... you know, because it was when people started writing their own songs really and performing them instead of having the songwriters in the little offices making pop songs and things like that. And so you had the singers that like weren't great singers, but they had that personality because they wanted to sing their own songs. And so you got like a lot of difference and a lot of acceptance for something a little more like raw. And I like that. Like, I like when stuff isn't perfect because it gives it this realness. And you have to have guts to sing your own songs, I think. You know, it's really vulnerable, it can be. And, yeah. But I love songwriting anyway. I love the whole aspect of saying something honest in a really attractive way.
Yeah, exactly. Now, being a songwriter and then also being the artist that records your music, do your songs evolve considerably from the time you hear them in your head and you're writing them down to when the tape's done rolling?
Yeah, I think it's really silly to, you know, to say that a song just came to you perfectly and that's what's on the recording. Like, it takes a lot of work and editing, at least for me. Like, I write so many songs a week, and most of them don't even see the light of day, but it's, you know, you play them to a few people, and if they like them, then you edit it, and you edit it, and you edit it, and you make it better, and then you bring it to a producer, and, you know, he or she hears something a little different, but that can totally lift it, and if you get the right person, which takes a while, I think, it just becomes something magical out of this world, you know? Like, I mean, if I sat here playing a song on my ukulele, it would be the same song, but it'd have a totally different energy than with, like, the horns and the drums and everything like that. So I think producers are, like, a huge part of that.
Well, and also, you've got a pretty considerably decently sized band. So, yeah. And I mean... I mean, like, what do you ever have the situation where they start improvising and it actually sounds good or actually sounds better than what you originally thought?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you got to be open if you're a creator in general. So I usually bring my band, my, like, 12-piece band, I bring in the song and I'm like, okay, just kind of do whatever you want, but here are the stops and here's where it should crescendo and here's where it should get funky, you know, and then we just... all work it out together, which is good because then they get to be part of it and it's like more of a gig to them than just being like a session musician on the side, mm-hmm. you know, for like this chick.
Now, how do you corral or, you know, and keep a 12-piece band, you know, like under your wing? Because I was in a 4-piece band and we fought all the time.
Yeah, it's like being in a relationship with 11 people. But, well, it does change, to be honest, because the people I work with, like, we don't write the songs together, so they're not totally tied in, and so they're, you know, they're performing to perform to get experience, and if we get paid, you know, pay, but that's getting better with time. Anyway, so they do switch out. It's like if someone... wants to go off and do a tour in Europe with like this, you know, metal band, and I'm not doing anything in that time, then they're going to go off and do that. You know, they're like in a bunch of different bands. So you just kind of have to flow with it and like keep people happy, but also be realistic. It's interesting, but I have an acoustic band as well because I know it's difficult to run around with a 12-piece.
Now, how did you get hooked up with LIPA in Liverpool and everything, being from L.A.?
Oh, yeah. It was a funny story, actually. I was applying to all these art schools, And I was at a callback audition for Frost Miami Music School. And my competitors were in the same room, you know, and they're all like, oh, what did you apply to? And what are you doing? And blah, blah, blah. I'm like, chill. Like, okay, well, I applied to this and this and this. And what did you apply to? And this one girl's like, oh, I applied to Lipa Paul McCartney School. I'm like, what's that? So I went home and I looked, and like the auditions were already done, like the deadline. But you could still apply if you're an international student. So I did last minute, like thinking, oh, this isn't going to go anywhere. But I got a call back and then I did the audition and I got in. So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to England. Why not?
And that's pretty hard to get in, too. I mean, that's kind of like trying to join the Navy SEALs almost. You know?
I'll take it. It's fun, though. It was just what I wanted, you know, because it wasn't... I didn't have to do all my GEDs for it. I could just go straight and do what I wanted to do, like songwriting, popular music, because most music schools are classical or... Broadway or something like that.
So it's not like the colleges over here where you got to take general courses no matter what your first year.
It's more like a trade school, I suppose, and it's only 3 years, which is awesome.
Nice. Now, what's your degree in?
Bachelor of Music.
Okay, like music studies or?
Yeah, it's just popular music is like what we learn. So we do production courses and songwriting and. Professional development, like business and stuff like that. Everything you need to know, really, to be in the music business.
Yeah, I've interviewed a few people that work at LIPA, you know, like Keith and Alexandra. And yeah. I mean, and they're fascinating at what they do. I mean, you don't just learn, like, music theory and everything. You learn the business side of it, which can hurt people right off the bat if they don't know what's going on.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, it's also, like, actually getting experience, too, because Liverpool, where Lipa is, it just has, like, 100 music venues, and they're all in these four streets, like, it's all very close together, so it's easy to get gigs, like, all the time, and I think that's what I learned the most from being there, was just getting out and gigging constantly, and just like being in the business while you're studying, so that it's not this shock when you graduate.
So, when you first saw the business side of it, because the reason I'm asking this is because Keith told me they bring attorneys in to talk to the students, you know, and business managers and stuff like that. Did that side seem daunting? Because I always find that intimidating.
To be honest, like. Music business is a tough one because it changes with every situation. And so we'd have master classes of people in the business, and like they'd give all of their whole speech and spiel and everything. But at the end, what they'd say is, but it's different for every person. Like, you have to make your own way. And we're like, okay. So basically, it's like learn as you go. But it's really good to know about contracts and things like that. Yeah, if you check yourself with a music lawyer and you read everything that you're supposed to read, and don't sign off your soul, I mean, it'll be all right.
Now, I got to ask you, I saw your performance on the Tube Extra, and we rebroadcasted that on our radio station, but that didn't really do your show justice, because your show was just as visually stunning as it was, you know, pleasing to your ears. I mean, like, yours was an actual show.
Yeah. Oh man, I wish you could have streamed the other one. Yeah, because it's the Chanel Sampson Circus, right? So it really is a entire performance with, you know, burlesque and acrobats and dancers and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's definitely half of it. Like, I think I market myself as a cabaret act, not just music, I suppose. Because music's supposed to be entertaining, you know? Why not give them a show?
Well, I mean, like yours was like, I mean, I don't know how else to put it, but I mean, it was like a high dollar. It looks like you spent some decent money on it.
Oh, you know? Well, thank you. For that show, we get funding from Lipa, which is really great. So we get to just put across what we actually want to do in the real world. Without spending $1 million.
Man, I mean, so is that the show that you take on the road?
Oh, it's a show I'd like to take on the road. I just started doing it. So, like, I went to London the other week with a burlesque and hoops performer and three of my songs for this mini showcase thing. And I did its playback with my backup singers and dancers. And so there was, like, five of us performing, but I didn't have my full 12-piece band, but it still worked because it was more about the whole vibe and, like, circus and be yourself and madness that sold it. So I think, like, if a venue can take my whole circus, then we could definitely do it there. But if they can't, there's always other options, you know. But even so, it's still that idea of the circus freaks coming together under my tent.
I mean it was beautiful. I mean, it was just as much visual art as it was music.
Thank you.
So, I mean, like, well, let me ask you this. I mean, obviously you're probably not going to get venues that will be able to take all of that due to the way different venues are built, you know, basically, but do you take into consideration, like, do you talk to the venues ahead of time to see what you can logistically take with you?
Yeah. It's great because I can format it any way I want for, like, each venue. So if we're putting on a real big showcase, which I'm thinking of doing in September, then it's going to be everything, you know, the whole band, the whole circus. And it's those special performances that get a lot of people in, because you don't want to gig with it all the time or else it won't be special and wanted, you know. So so those are the big gigs, the special gigs. And then the smaller ones, which are just, you know, advertising the music and the idea of it all, it's really, really easy to do with, like, 3 to 5 people. So just depends. Like, at this stage, obviously, I can't take my entire circus on the road for free. Well, but there's ways to work around it and to make it what I want it to be.
Well, let me ask you this. If you had an unlimited supply of tax-free money, where would be the first place you would take it?
Let's see. Probably New York.
Man, there we go. Great. I was thinking either Broadway on New York, yeah, or, like, and then you just amp it up, you know, because now you have all this tax-free money and stuff, or Vegas.
Oh, yeah. That could be interesting. Vegas is kind of like this other world to me. Like, last time I went, I felt like I was an alien. It's just mad. But I suppose that fits, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I love Vegas. I thought I was going to hate it until I went there, and, you know, because I'm not the type that's going to leave broke, but I just thought it was fascinating. It's like these billion-dollar palaces, and yeah, then two blocks away, just the unlimited row of pawn shops. You know?
And all the lights and,
yep,
craziness. It's, yeah, man, it's another world.
Exactly. But you ever notice it just abruptly ends when downtown ends? Like, you could tell, you could see to the inch where downtown ends and then the residential areas begin.
That's true, actually. It's really weird. Like, you go into, like, suburbia. Like, is it still Vegas?
Yeah, where, like, you could kind of see, like, the casinos in the distance, but then, like, you're in, like, a housing addition. Mm-hmm. You know, but you're right.
I think that places like that exist, though, that are just completely out there. Like, you'd never guess that something like that could exist. And it's successful, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, Chicago's like that. I mean, like, because, like, here you see, you know, $600,000 penthouses and then literally around the corner, gun stores and liquor shops.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, so, diversity.
Yeah, yeah, that's the new America in a way. You know, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, every state is so extremely different, right? It's tough to put it all into America.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this: with you being an American, you know, I mean, you know, you're from LA, so, I mean, you know, the LA music scene, and now you know the Liverpool music scene. What are the differences?
Thing is, I left here when I was 18. And I was just in my room writing songs, so I didn't really get into the LA music scene at all. and I couldn't go clubbing or anything because I wasn't 21. And so now I'm 21, and I'm back home, and I'm like, I need to figure out what's going on here. Like, I did a couple gigs over Christmas, which went really well. But LA is so huge. It's not like Liverpool, it's just like a community of all the art here, and it's really easy to know what's going on and everything like that. It's like, it's all very spread out, so you got to know where to go and when. And also, it's pay to play here, which is way, way different. Like, if you don't sell enough tickets, you have to pay the venue, et cetera.
See, I think that's stupid.
I think so, too.
You know, I mean, we have that here in a lot of places, too, where, like, if they don't make enough at the door, they got to make up the difference.
Yeah. But, well, what's interesting, too, is, like, Liverpool, you could play for free, right? But thing is, you don't make much money either. So it's either way, because it's like if you sell a lot of tickets on the door here, at least you get paid for working. So I don't know. I guess it's finding the right venues and the right gigs.
And the LA music scene's probably changed. A lot
of people to come to your gigs.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and the LA music scene's probably changed a million times since you were 18.
Probably.
You know, because, well, I mean, from what I've seen of L.A., because the times that I've been there, if you don't like the scene, wait a couple days.
Really good. I kind of love that, though, because people take chances here, you know? They're, like, not afraid of something new and different.
Exactly. So, well, why don't you tell us about your new EP, The Beginning?
Yeah.
You've got some killer songs on there.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, it was definitely fun to write all the songs and record. They're mostly about this guy, Matthew. Am I allowed to swear? Okay, so the first song is called Fuck You, Matthew. And it's like, oh, this guy didn't call me. I'm totally getting over him. And that kind of vibe goes on for a bit in my set, but it's always with this air of like fuck you confidence, you know, which is how I tend to get over emotional things. Instead of hiding in my room and crying, I tend to just get really like angsty and write songs. But then the other one, this old guy, actually my first year in Liverpool, I met this, like, famous songwriter, and he hit on me, and I thought that we were going to his place to write songs, but he really just wanted more than my voice.
No! How could that happen?
Yeah. Oh, my God, I was so naive.
Hey, it wasn't Paul McCartney, was it?
No! I don't know. I might have said yes.
Yeah, I would have said yes.
But, right, so I ends up writing a song about that called This Old Guy, which is, like, extremely cheerful and over-the-top happy just because of how disgusting it was to me. You know, that was the only way I could react. It was just like, oh, let's make a poppy song about this. And I recently did a music video to it, which is going to come out this summer, and it's really fun. I worked with this director named Lee, and we built all of the sets and then had them come in and out, like, in real time. And so nothing was done on the computer. It's all, like, brought in and out while I'm singing the different songs. So, yeah, that'll be out in, let's see, July, yeah. Which is fun. And then Little Red Dot is about the same guy, Matthew, and it's, like, when you're waiting to get your period and you think you're pregnant.
Oh, wow.
And, so naturally, I wrote a song about it because, you know, it freaked me out. And everything was fine in the end. I just miscounted the days. But and then the last one, Worth the Gold, is really about, you know, loving yourself. And my friends in Liverpool who helped me out of, like, a tough time, because I think being an artist, I naturally get extremely emotional sometimes, and I have to reality check myself, you know, so that I stay mentally sane. So I kind of turned that song around, and I actually wrote it to myself in the beginning, like, hey, what are you doing? you should know you're golden, you know, you should love yourself, stop moping around and look at what's around you, and realize that it's great and you could make it whatever you want, you know, it's getting out of the victimhood. But now it's a song to anyone who feels like that, which is great because I always use music to get out of moods or to feel like someone understands what I'm going through. So I want to put that across, that honesty.
So in a way, this is like a concept, that EP.
Oh, yeah.
Because, did all this stuff happen in chronological order? Like the...
It pretty much did. Yes.
So it's got an uplifting ending now.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's another thing. I can't leave stuff like unanswered or without like possibility of happiness. Like even if I'm writing about something really dark, it always has an uplifting ending in the way that you can change it. Like you can change whatever is dark in your life. But it's the fact that accepting that it is happening, not just ignoring it, you know, like seeing it and then changing it.
Exactly. It's kind of like, failures don't exist. They're just lessons.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Well, let me ask you this. If you could take one song off the EP and all the others had to go away, which would it be and why?
Entertainment value, like, Fuck You Matthew always makes everyone laugh because they're like, whoa, this song is so happy and ridiculous, but it's so angry. But personally, I always feel really tied to Worth the Gold just because it is about self-love and getting out of a depression.
Well, and it sounds like it reminds you of the time when you got through it all.
Yeah, that's true. It does, definitely. And it's also like a homage to my friends because I never had friends growing up because I was just so... No, I know, it's strange. So I was just like so different and people were, jealous or just didn't know how to respond.
See, I picture you being the center of the group.
Well, I was really shy, actually. Until I went to Liverpool, and then people were really, really nice to me. So I was like, wow, this is so cool. I started performing, right? Because I was just like in my room writing songs before I moved. And so when you perform, you have to get out of your comfort zone and you have to be social and be out there. And suddenly it just kind of changes your whole social being, like how you react to people just makes you more open, I suppose, and like less scared.
Now, do you think that was because you were in a more creative, artistic environment with Lipa being there?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, when you're around people that are accepting and that are the same breed as you are, you know, like not afraid to be different or not afraid to show who they are, it just makes you feel really, really comfortable and open. And I think that's like the main bit of socializing, really, is like being comfortable with yourself and able to express.
Now, when you went from LA to Liverpool and you went from an environment where you felt more of alone than part of a group to where you were, you know, a part of what seems to be an intricate creative lifestyle, did that charge your creativity in a way?
It charged it in a different way, because before it was all writing to get out of, like, being, having no friends. And then afterwards, it was writing to express all the experiences that were happening. So I think, like, no matter what, life is going to creatively charge you if you decide to take it, you know, but just in different ways. So, yeah. It was exciting because I never had, like, guys either. And then I went to Liverpool and it was like, whoa, men. They exist and they like me. Oh, this is going to be great.
Well, and it sounds like Lipa, you know, or that the whole scene there gave you more confidence as an artist and as a person.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, plus it's the failure and learning thing, right? Like, I failed so many times when I was at Liverpool. I had, like, 5 bands my first year, and I lost my voice constantly and stuff like that. And I was really ill as well. I was, like, sick for 3 years. And so I was getting out of that in Liverpool as well. So, like, it really didn't all start coming up roses until this year. But I'm so happy that all of it happened because it is learning, you know.
Now, how do you feel about your career at this point? Because you're getting a lot of positive buzz right now.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I mean, I know this sounds a bit up myself, but it's about time. Like, I'm so patient, you know. Like, but I.
So you knew when you were a baby that was going to happen.
I know it takes time to figure out who you are and what you do. Like, I wouldn't have been ready last year, you know. I wasn't that good last year, but I think it's finally what I want to express now. And so I'm just like, bring it on. You know, I'm recording my next EP. I got 2 music videos coming out. I'm doing a tour in July. I'm like doing a cabaret showcase in London. I'm excited for life. It's finally where I want it to be, you know.
I mean, that's broken. Amazing. I mean, that is just simply amazing that you've gotten, you know, from where you were a few years ago to now. I mean, that's quite a feat. I mean, if I were you, the second I got back to L.A., I would have crushed everybody that, you know, that didn't think I'd make it, you know. You know, but I'm sure you didn't because you have decency, but...
No. No, I kind of... I don't know. I just feel a bit bad for them now, really, because I love myself, and I gained a lot of that self-love through not having friends and through having to be my own best friend. So it was like, I don't regret anything, yeah. And so I wish them the best, and the fact that I am successful is enough.
But yeah, you know, like, until you go to Starbucks and see one of them behind the counter. I want that guy making my latte. You know. So, but no, I you shouldn't do that. I know you don't do that. I do that, but I know you don't. Let me ask you, what do you have coming up? I mean, you talked about the video. You're working on a new EP. You're going to do the shows. I mean, let's get all that in order. I mean, who, what, and where?
All right. So, my music video for This Old Guy. Well, okay, what was crazy first is that I did 2 music videos in 2 days, which is, like, insane if you've ever done a music video. You know, it takes, like, 3 days for one. Anyway... but I only had 2 days. I had the studio, and I'm like, I don't want to pay for more than this, so let's just work 17 hours. Anyway, they both came out great. And I'm editing Worth the Gold right now, because I really like to edit my music videos. It allows me to put what's in my head out to you guys, which is useful. And then I let my director... do this Old Guy video and like totally take over. It's really cool working with someone, you know, not just doing it all yourself, because you know, 2 minds are better than 1, of course, and you don't stress yourself out with work, so that's something I'm learning. Anyway, so This Old Guy is coming out July 28th, which is when I'm graduating as well, and I have, like, this big gig at the Casimir, just this great venue in Liverpool. I'm finishing up my recording of The Middle with my producer, Felix Hagen, who's also, like, a rock star in his own right with his Felix Hagen and the Family band, which you should check out, too. They're really wild and also very theatrical, so we have, like, the same taste. So yeah, we're recording that in July and probably finishing it up by September. Releasing Worth the Gold video September 19th, I think, which is like before I go back home to LA, because it's about all my Liverpool friends and all that love and stuff. So I figure we'll have a big party, you know, kind of a going away party, and release the video. Yeah, and then... I have to finish writing the songs for the end EP because, you know, beginning, middle, and end. And that's all about my being happy alone, you know, not having to be strung on by someone romantically, and then falling in love with someone for real. And of course, at first saying like, no, I don't want to fall in love. I'm finally happy on my own. Go away. But just accepting it because it's very rewarding to be in love for real and not just infatuation. So that's all new and happy.
Exactly. And there is a big difference, you know.
Yeah. And I'm so impatient. I never like let it grow.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm not ashamed to say it. I'm 42 years old and I'm just learning that.
Yeah.
So I mean, we all learn it at our own pace, but it is the truth.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
the other one is so much like quicker or fun.
Yeah. Well, when I was in my 20s, though, it was a lot of fun, but yeah. You know, but it, all you get out of it's the memories.
Yeah. You know? And if you're a songwriter, some songs.
Yeah. Exactly, and stuff. Yeah. So, but yeah. Well. Thank you for doing this today, Chanel. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
You know, you've got a lot of fans here in this office. I mean, like when you come out with the new videos and the new EPs, let us know and we'll promote them.
Oh, sweet. Thank you very much.
So,
yeah, I will definitely. I'll send it over.
Definitely.
It was pretty funny doing the This Old Guy music video because, like, I hired someone to be the old creepy guy hitting on me, and so I had to like relive that experience.
Nice. Was it a Paul McCartney lookalike?
No.
So.
No, we had a master class with him actually, and he was like the coolest guy ever.
He was in your class?
Master class. So he came and talked to us all.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it was so cool.
How many phones were out filming it?
We weren't allowed to.
Oh, okay.
But a few.
Man, I would have come there with a GoPro strapped to my head.
Right?
disguised as a bandaged.
Yeah.
You know?
Where did the voice, voice memo on it, so.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what did he talk about?
Everything. I mean, we asked him questions and stuff, so we talked about what he's doing now, and he's like, yeah, like, Kanye called me up, and I'm like, oh, Kanye's pretty cool, you know, maybe he's too cool for me, but, yeah, I'll write with him, and he's, like, so humble.
Nice. Hey, what did you think about the buzz about the song him and Kanye did where, like, I don't know if you saw this, but on Twitter, it was like, who's this guy working with Kanye, or like, it's really nice that Kanye helps out new artists like Paul McCartney.
Hilarious. So, it's just publicity.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Like everything else, but it's entertainment.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Well, yeah. Where can we find you online, by the way?
Well, you can find my Facebook fan page has like everything on it. So it's just called Chanel Samson Music. Chanel like the perfume, Samson like Samson the Delilah. And music like the thing you listen to. And then I'm on Twitter as well. Chanel Samson, and I have a website that's Chanel Samson Music, so it's all pretty basic, really. Anyway, yeah, feel free to contact me or tweet me or whatever. Like, my music is for you guys, so.
I mean, it's pretty broad. I mean, and definitely come see your shows. I mean, we'll post up your upcoming shows and stuff if you want to send that to us and stuff.
Because I mean, Chicago.
Yeah, dude, definitely. Hey, tell you what, you come here, I'll buy you some drinks.
Okay.
So,
you guys have any like acrobats over there?
No, not unless they're escaping from jail or something. You know, acrobats a necessity, I guess. Then you'd say.
I'll find some bar dancers or something.
Exactly. You know what would go good in your show? Like parkour runners.
Oh my gosh, that would be cool.
That would be sweet.
Like all these wild sets around me, like just like jump up and down.
Yeah, or just where they just like run around the auditorium, man.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, just don't tell insurance company.
Nah, they're just part of the crowd, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm not responsible for people who aren't dressed for the stage. So, well, thanks for being on the interview, man. I really appreciate you doing it, Chanel.
Thank you. So, it's always fun to talk about what's going on, you know.
Thanks. Well, now the interview's over. Do you think we covered everything? Was it good?
Yeah, I think so. That's pretty much everything I'm doing. Like, I mean, of course, I have future plans, but I always plan out my life in advance. Like, after this whole 3 EP beginning, middle, and end thing, I'm going to release a political album. Yeah, because I'm really, really into the idea that art can change society. And I wrote this whole dissertation on it as well and got like all these facts and examples from history. So I'm planning on saving the world, but I'm going to have to wait a little bit.
I guess you're going to save the world one note at a time.
Oh, yeah. Great.
So, well, what political, I mean, like, is it going to be U.S. political or British political or global political?
It's global and U.S. It depends, because, you know, I have a whole album worth of political songs, so there's going to be a lot about the green movement and saving the earth, because we really need to get on that. And then also this, like, liberty movement that's happening in the U.S. as well, because I don't want my rights taken away, and I don't want to give money to things that I don't know are happening. And so I have like a lot of passion of self-sufficiency and individualism, which already comes out in an emotional way through my songs, but will come out in a political way down the line.